I want to share some things today, going back to a theme that's been part of my life and that I think is important for all of us to connect to. And so I'm in a series. We've done two parts. This will be part three on overcoming fear. And today, I want to talk to you in particular about phobophobia. Anybody got any idea what phobophobia might be? Fear of fear or fear of being afraid. So 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. I'm just going to encourage you to turn there. We're going to use that to launch a lot of these messages, but it's a key verse. If you look in the parking lot, you'll find a van. And that van has 2 Timothy 1:7 on it. And that's for the very purpose of me seeing it on a regular basis. My wife drives the van. And when she's driving, God has not given me a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. And there you go. That's what the verse is. If you don't have that marked or highlighted, if you've got one of those, you know, Bible programs, a lot of them have highlights. It's really good for you to have that one where you can find it. And so let's say it together. I'll let you repeat after me. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So the next time you're going crazy, ask yourself, what am I afraid of? Yeah. We'll get to some of these things, and we've already began to touch on them, but it's interesting. One of the most famous quotes in American history was given by a guy named Franklin Roosevelt. And he talked about fear. Does anybody know what I'm going to quote? There we go. Somebody said it. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He said that on March 4, 1933. And the reason he said it was because the country had a lot of things going on. You may think this is the worst time in our country's history. There is a lot of fear in the land today, it seems. There's a lot of people running around with their hair on fire screaming bloody murder. I'm not sure really much bloody murder is actually going on. In fact, a few of those people need to be dropped into a time machine and taken back to 1933 to see what life was like then, see why a president said this. And here's his whole quote, actually. First of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror. Think about that. And what was going on back then in the world as forces were starting to do all these things across the world. And I think that might be 43. I wonder if that's a mistype. But anyway, there was this massive time in our country. We had just come through the it's 33. We had just come through the Great Depression. Any of you ever seen pictures of the Great Depression? Where people were actually out with cups full of pencils selling them, or apples on the street corner. There wasn't any kind of social security. People didn't have any safety nets at all except for their own families. Wow. Think about that just for a little bit. And yet today we think we're scared sometimes when we see what's going on. He called it nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. What was he saying? Sometimes fear gets you running when you ought to be charging. I think that the people back then knew a whole lot more about fear than maybe we do, and yet we think things are sometimes worse than they are. This president, at least at that moment, didn't like fear. He didn't act like it didn't exist, but he also didn't give it permission to run the show. And he gave the American people the encouragement to resist fear. Fear is something that we should resist, and we should overcome it. Are we overcomers with fear, or do we agree with fear? Wow. Now, look, many people hate to admit that they're afraid, and I'm going to tell you the truth. Probably of all the phobias that I can think of that I might still struggle with, phobophobia might be one. I don't want to admit that I have fear. Like, it's hard to admit that I have fear. It says, I wrote a book on fear. I'm supposed to be the fearless one. You know, I'm supposed to have this all together. I'm supposed to tell you how to not be afraid, and then I got to show you how by not being afraid. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. If anyone suggests that you become or that you are fearful, you can find out whether it's true or not by the way you respond. If someone suggests you're afraid and you get real defensive, they're probably right. What if we became determined to recognize our fears and eliminate them? And I just want to share this with you. It happened again recently, and it's happened so many times. I've actually told people who said they were afraid of this or that, that they could not be afraid, that they could get away from their fears, that they could overcome their fears. And I've actually had people say things like, yeah, that's easy for you to say, or better yet, no, this isn't fear. This is just smart. What is it? Well, I think the first fear that maybe we have to overcome, if we're going to start overcoming fear in our life, is the fear of being afraid, or the fear of admitting that we might be a little afraid. Because everyone experiences fear. Did you know that Jesus experienced fear? Some of you are thinking about that. I'll have to mull that over, preacher. Well, let me just say it this way. I'm not saying Jesus was afraid. I'm saying that fear, the operating system of darkness, presented itself in front of him. I don't know whether he ever got any goosebumps or whether the hair on the back of his neck ever rose up. I'm not sure what quantifies or qualifies that to be, you know, permissible for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. What I do understand is that he didn't cooperate with it. The scripture says he was tempted in every way such as we are. He was tempted in every way such as we are, yet he did not sin. So Jesus knew what fear was, but he just never gave in to it. I can't say that. Now, fear has a lot of definitions, and the first one that you'll find in the Merriam-Webster dictionary goes like this. An unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation of or awareness of danger. Let me just say this. Depending on how you define fear and what you're talking about, and we're going to talk about that just a little bit this morning, some fear isn't maybe all you feared it might be. Let's just put it that way. An awareness of danger is not a bad thing. An awareness of danger, in fact, can be beneficial. I was standing in the backyard of a pastor friend of mine years ago. Some of you remember the folks that came here for a while from Zion, or from Zion. It's not Zion. It's from Peace Lutheran. Dave and his wife Rachel and their family. I was in Dave's backyard. I don't remember what I was doing there. I really don't. I don't. And for some reason, I was back there, as I recollect, memories are kind of strange things, by myself. All I remember for sure is that I stepped on a yellow jacket's nest. You know, they like to burrow in the ground, and if you put your foot over one, then the ones coming back and the ones coming out, they all decide you must be something worth doing something to, and they tried. They really did. All of a sudden, I had enough hair back then that I could feel this burrowing in my hair and a little bit of buzzing, and I suddenly had revelation. I had revelation that this was not going to be good, and so I immediately ran like a little girl. I mean, I ran. I got out of there. Because I had a sudden awareness of danger. And somebody says, were you experiencing fear? Well, by the definition of awareness of danger, yes, I knew. And I managed to get out of there and brushed off several of the little buggers and escaped unharmed, unscathed. And I don't remember what we were doing. I think I talked to Dave and Rachel for a minute, and then I got in the car and was heading down the road. And I went to make a phone call. And that back at that time, I had one of those Bluetooth earpieces. was before we had it in the car and, you know, and all the fancy stuff we got now. So, but I was fancy for the day. I had a Bluetooth earpiece, and I went to make a phone call and realized my Bluetooth earpiece wasn't on my ear anymore. And I knew immediately where it had to be. It was back there in the yard. Well, had I been suffering from spexophobia, I think that's maybe how it's pronounced, the fear of wasps, I probably would not have been able to enter into the yard and get my Bluetooth back. But I wasn't, you see. Fear defined as awareness of danger is very different from a phobia. And that's another kind of fear. A phobia is a strong, persistent fear of situations, object, activities, or persons. So I didn't have a phobia. And because I didn't have a phobia, I went back into the backyard and found my Bluetooth. I'm not going to leave it back there to be crunched up in Dave's mower. And I found it. And I kept an eye out for, you know, some of the yellow jackets. And then I proceeded to get back in my car and head home. I wasn't under the kind of fear that was debilitating. And some people, by the way, are. There would be some people that if they knew there were wasps in that area, they could not go there. They just wouldn't be able to. They would be so full of anticipation and angst and all that stuff that they would just be freaked out. The main symptom of phobias is unreasonable desire to avoid a feared subject. So the question is, do you have anything unreasonable going on with fear? It's not a bad thing to be afraid of some of the things that can hurt you. But sometimes we're so afraid that we can't even function in life. And that's not a good thing. There's a guy named Gavin DeBecker, and he has a company called Gavin DeBecker and Associates. And I read his book once, and he wrote a book called, now he's not a Christian man that I know of. He didn't talk about his faith in his book. He talked about his company, DeBecker and Associates, is one of the foremost companies in the United States for protecting dignitaries from other countries and around the world. He works with the CIA on a regular basis, and he wrote a book called The Gift of Fear. In his business, the willies is something you want your people to be able to have and to know what to do with. And he wrote a whole book about how people should sometimes trust what they're feeling. And by the way, it almost sounded prophetic what he was saying. I thought, this guy's really got something going on here. When we feel fear, we have an opportunity to react to that fear in the proper way. He has guys that are protecting these people, and they all of a sudden get this feeling that there might be something going on, and they find out they're right more often than they want to. But they also know what to do because they are armed and definitely ready to protect whoever they're protecting. And they get paid all the big bucks for it. And I've actually heard this guy referred to, you know, it was years and years and years ago when I first heard of him and read the book. My son was actually considering going to Chicago and working for Gavin DeBecker. That's how I first heard about him. The people that work with Mr. DeBecker are highly, highly trained. They go through a lot of stuff, and they know how to take bold action in the face of fear. They don't sit back when things start going haywire. They run to the battle. That's how they're trained. Wow. I couldn't help but think to myself, what would it be like if all of us were trained like that? What if we realized that fear is subject to human will? That's why King David, by the way, was able to say, "The Lord is with me, and I will not be afraid." Psalm 118, verse 6. Most of us can control our emotions. Sometimes we just don't want to. By the way, much of what is called mental illness is the lack of control over our emotions. Have you ever seen a child, and I'm sure most of us in here who have kids have seen this, you wanted them to eat something, and they just didn't want to? Not because they knew what it tasted like, because they just wanted to show you that they could not eat it. And you knew it would be good for them, and you knew it would help them, and you knew it would be, and they'd be really happy if they ate it, but they weren't going to go eat, not going to eat it. Yeah. Got a teenager that still does that. We just know they would love it if they've tried it. The goal of fear is to keep you from things that actually are going to be good for you and that you'll probably like a lot more than you think. I've seen those little kids when they didn't realize that I was looking, they did taste it after all, and then they liked it. Right? Happens sometimes. And then you got those sometimes, though. You ever have that kid that you knew it really because they didn't like it, but they just made up their mind once you tried to make them eat it, they were never, ever going to eat that, ever? See, that kind of a thing is inside of us sometimes, and we get a determination that keeps us from the things that would be good for us. I wrote this book about fear called Gotnophobia, but as a young person, I was not happy with books. I wouldn't say I had bibliophobia, which is the fear of books, but I just didn't want to mess with books. I didn't like them much. And I didn't know why I didn't like books exactly. I just knew that, I don't know, reading was a hassle. And I didn't know why reading was a hassle. So we all know people like I was. You probably know somebody. Maybe you're like I was. I'm not a good reader. I don't like to read. I had that thing going on. I talked to a guy that I was working with who went to high school with Lisa, and I ended up with a job with this guy selling flowers, by the way. Yeah. Long story. But he was actually a teacher for kids with learning disabilities, and I found out working with him something very interesting. I found out I was dyslexic, and I didn't know I was dyslexic. I just knew we were looking in a phone book one day, and he says, "What's the address?" I said 304, and he goes, "No, it's 403." And I went, "Oh yeah, I do that all the time." And that got him to asking me a bunch of questions, and he said, "Yeah, you're dyslexic, dude." I don't know if that was an official definition or not, but it made sense to me. Like, words on the page just didn't seem to want to hold still, and I just had a hard time with reading stuff. Some insist that it's not a learning disability, though. It's a learning difference. And that can be kind of, I don't know, supported in that, according to historians, Leonardo da Vinci, Alexander Graham Bell, Walt Disney, Winston Churchill, Albert Einstein were all dyslexic people. There's a woman who's written now well over 4 billion copies of her writings have spread around the world. Anybody got an idea what author, what female author maybe has 4 billion copies of her writing, over 4 billion spread around the world now? Agatha Christie. She wrote like, I don't know, 66 books, detective novels, and then she wrote a bunch of other stuff under a pseudonym. Agatha Christie was dyslexic. How? I mean, that just, how? A dyslexic person ends up writing 66 novels, detective novels, and then a whole bunch of other stuff? She's the most prolific, or at least her novels are the most prolific novels in the world. And she was dyslexic. You know, my handwriting was great in school. I would take these tests and they would say, "Are you going to be all right?" Or they would, you know, what do they call that? IQ tests. And, "Oh, you're going to be really good. You're going to be really good." And then I'd disappoint my teachers because I wasn't. And that was part of the problem. See, I am a genius. I just had to overcome my dyslexia. There you go. I knew I could get a laugh out of you anyway. I was going down the road one day, and I literally saw this sign in a yard. This was back when we lived in southern Indiana. And I saw this sign in a yard. It said, "Kill him!" And I went, "Wow, I wonder what's going on." It looked like a political sign. It was you know, the time of year when people were running for office. So I drove around the block just to see what it really said. And it was a lady named Kim Hill. She was running for some kind of local office. I thought, boy, somebody's really mad at somebody. They want them dead, not just voted out, you know. The intimidation I used to feel about reading, and I really had a lot of intimidation about it. I was afraid to read. I was afraid to take a timed test. I was afraid to do anything connected with reading. The intimidation I felt was a form of fear. It was a low-grade phobia, if you will. And since fear is not really fully rational, but it can be an awareness of danger, you have to kind of know which is which and then react accordingly. But if you're like one of Gavin DeBecker's men, you feel it, but your reaction to it is totally rational instead of irrational. Or you take Joyce with you, the fearless fun lovers. The intimidation I felt about reading didn't hinder me many, many times. But it didn't stop me. I was able to get my grades. I just had to figure out workarounds and different things. And I did okay. I wasn't the best student in school, but I didn't mind school that much. Encouragement can be found in what others sometimes do when they overcome and they win their battles. Encouragement. Putting courage into yourself. Getting courage put into you. And by the way, courage is never really necessary until fear is present. So when you feel fear, that's your opportunity. It's not always just the end of things or a dread that comes. When that dread comes, you have to ask yourself, is there something good here that something's trying to keep me from experiencing? And resistance is not futile. But we've got to be unafraid to admit that we have sometimes battled fear. Another definition for fear is to believe in something other than what God created us to believe. Think about that for a second. To believe something other than what God created us to believe. So if there's a fear, and the fear is not rational, and the fear wasn't created by God for me to believe, then when I let that fear into my life, that's when things start to go sideways and I start to lose. Years ago, I remember hearing Phil Pano. No, actually, it was Paul, his brother, Paul Craig. He was in Africa on a missions trip, and he got on a plane with Richard Roberts. And the plane looked really rickety. And they get on, and this thing takes off, and it just didn't sound good. It didn't feel good. And he was on the plane, and he says, I pretty much gripped, you know, the thing the whole time. It wasn't too long a flight, just, you know, an hour probably. And they finally landed. But he said the whole time Richard Roberts was whistling and happy. When he got off the plane, he says, look back at that thing we just flew here on. Just look at that. Did you hear that thing? He says, yeah. He says, what's the problem? He says, didn't you think we were going to, you know, fall out of the sky? And he says, no, I never had thought of that. He says, you never thought of that? No. He said, I didn't think of it because God told me we were going to this other city, and I knew if God told me that was where we were going, that's where we were going. The plane couldn't crash because that's where I'm supposed to go. I thought, man, that's a cool story. Fear tries to tell us something other than what God's Spirit has told us. So when we're moving in fear, we have taken the position of believing a lie. And when we believe a lie, you've heard me say it, we empower the liar. In Mark chapter 4, actually the disciples experienced the very same thing that Richard Roberts was talking about. They were in the boat. They were in the boat with Jesus. He's asleep. The storm comes up. It seems perfectly reasonable to think, we're going to die. Right? And Jesus, he rebukes the storm, and in another one of the stories from one of the other Gospels, and he rebukes his disciples too. Why were you afraid? You know, sometimes Jesus is just so inconsiderate. Like he doesn't he care about how I feel? My feelings, you know, we're here dying in the boat, and you took care of it, but you know, we were afraid, and then you're like giving us stuff, telling us, we shouldn't, like, what about our feelings, Jesus? And he's like, stop it. Sometimes when I try to talk to people about overcoming their fears, I get that reaction. It's like, well, you don't know what it's like. You don't have a fear of this or that or the other. Yeah, well, I did. And I'll hit on that from time to time in this thing. One of my fears I already mentioned today. Fear of being afraid or looking afraid, which is, by the way, a little bit of fear of man. The disciples were freaking out. And I got to admit, if I think if I was in that boat, I'd have probably been freaking out too. But Jesus said, don't do it. Don't do it. Why are you fearful? He said, how is it that you have no faith? If Jesus says we're going to the other side, and that's what he had told them when they got in the boat, then you're going to the other side. In fact, you want to have some fun? If you can believe God's promise for you, think about this a minute. If you can believe God's promise for you, and you can believe that you're going to see that promise fulfilled in your life, then you can really have some fun when you're with people who can't quite see it as well as you, and they're all freaking out, and you're just like, yep, I'm cool. I'm good. But you have to believe. And there are many stories told of fearless martyrs, and some of them became martyrs, but they weren't afraid because they believed. They believed. They trusted God. I do want to say this. Feelings must not direct our choices. Our choices must direct our feelings. And I believe they can. But you have to actually train for it a little bit. That's what De Becker's guys do on a real natural level. They train themselves so that when they feel something, their reaction to it isn't to freak out, but their reaction is to take appropriate discretionary action and get done what needs to be done. Wow, if people in the world can do that, we as Christians ought to be able to do that. We got the Holy Spirit inside of us. Remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? You think it was a little freaky for them when they saw somebody thrown in the furnace and they were next? But they made declarations. Listen to them. King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. That's courage. And it wasn't needed until they were told they had to do something that they chose not to do because it wasn't God's will. So they overcame wrong believing, which was fear, with right believing. And this is where sometimes we fail. We don't always instinctively realize that it is fear to sin. And somebody says, what do you mean by fear? Well, I mean missing the mark. And I have a whole chapter on that in my book, Harmartophobia, the fear of sin. In case you haven't read the book, the good news is I'm probably going to preach most of it here in, over the next half a year. And you'll get to listen to it. You won't have to. And then you can just link them all together and listen to the whole book almost. When we are struggling, we do need to be free, however, to admit that we've fallen short of the glory of God. We need to be free to admit that we need encouragement. And sometimes we need to admit it to others who will try to encourage us. Listen, if you're afraid of snakes, come see me. I can help you with that. You say, really? Yeah, because I've never been afraid of snakes. I made pets out of them when I was a kid. That's right. They're really smooth. And then you can make a nice belt out of them after they die. I'll say more about snakes in a minute. My wife and I once were, you know, we've had lots of things that freaked us out over the years. We received an overdue notice one time from the Ohio State Taxation Department. And the overdue notice said we hadn't paid our taxes, and we knew we had written the check. At least we thought we knew. Because I said, well, where's the statement? Now, my wife, by the way, has never bounced a check in all of our years of marriage. She is very, very, very good about keeping a checkbook. The problem is we had two of them. And she was like trying to figure out why the check bounced. And I said, well, where's the statement? And the check didn't bounce, I'm sorry. Why they hadn't cashed the check yet, or why they didn't show that they had gotten our check. And she went to find the statement. She couldn't find the statement. Of course, you know, we're both kind of looking at each other. When you owe, we paid some money that year. It was over $1,000 that we had paid to the state that year. That happens to me a lot because I'm kind of the way I do my taxes. So I'd sent this money into the state, and now I was going to have to come up, wait a minute, where's the money? And she couldn't find the statement. And I'm like, you know, and we had anticipation about it because we had a run-in with the IRS some years ago, 30 now probably, where somebody we paid to send our taxes in didn't. And it was like July when we realized that none of our taxes had been filed. And they like to do this thing called penalties. And that time it was a $1,200 penalty. So we were like $1,000 and then a $1,200. And so we're looking at each other and we started to have this low-grade fear rise up. And it's like, well, I don't know. Well, how come you always file this stuff? Where's it at? Well, I don't know. It's probably out of your checking account. Did you balance your checking account? I don't need to. I don't write any checks out of my checking account. You know, we were kind of going back and forth at each other because we were a little nervous. None of you ever do that, I know. But my wife and I have had that problem. And so we were apprehensive. Everybody say apprehensive. Okay. And you know, I began to get real defensive. And in my defense, you know, I didn't write a lot of checks out of that. So it was real easy for me to just look it up online. So, by the way, I'm defending myself now to you. So what is that? That's defensiveness. Everybody say defensive. And so we couldn't find everything. And it created some angst. Everybody say angst. You know, And we weren't really angry, but we were tense. Everybody say tense. And mildly irritated. Everybody say irritated. Mm-hmm. So I found out that the check had been cashed. That didn't really help a whole lot because then I was starting to wonder, well, who cashed it? Did the state cash it? Or, you know, what's going on? Why are we getting this in the mail? And you know, so then I started to worry. Everybody say worry. Mm-hmm. And as I was mulling the situation over, my concern was rising. Everybody say concern. And it was morning, and the state offices wouldn't have been open yet anyway, so I got in the shower, and I stood in the shower. And usually showers make me feel better, but I wasn't doing well that day because I was still wondering what I was going to say to these people. And should I call my CPA first, or, you know, who do I talk to? And there was a number on there, but I didn't know who I would be talking to after all. And if we had to send the statement into them, we didn't have a copy of the statement. How much were they going to charge me with the statement at the bank? And how much was this all going to cost me? And I don't have time for this kind of mistake. And, you know, don't they know my time's valuable? That's how I felt by the time I got out of the shower. I was getting myself pretty worked up. But, you know, I finally got on the phone, and when I talked to the first person, I kept my reservations. Everybody say reservations. To myself. And it turned out that I spoke to a very nice lady named Donna, and she straightened the whole thing out in a few seconds. It was great. And all of my anxiety, everybody say anxiety, had been a tremendous time of wasted energy. I was ready for a nap. It was like 9:30. Now, I had to repeat all those words, you know, apprehensive, worried, angst, tense, irritated, concerned, reservations, anxiety. These are all words that we use all the time. They're synonyms for fear is what they are. Low grade at that, and maybe fear that you could say is justified, except for what fear is justified is the problem. And do I really want justified fear in my life? Do I want to justify the fear that I have? Sometimes we're afraid we'll appear weak or people will think less of us. But here's the truth. The truth is that the bravest among us has fear. You know, the Bible tells us to imitate Christ, but it also, Paul said at one point, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I would rather imitate Paul because I figure I can come closer to making a good imitation of Paul than I can of Jesus sometimes. So I'll start with Paul And Paul wasn't afraid to admit that he had his moments. You can find a couple of them, but here's one. He said, "For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts. Inside were fears." Fear inside of him. "Nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast comforted us." See, you can't get comfort for what you're going through if you can't admit you're going through it. Does that make sense to anybody but me? And yet, we all do this, don't we? We don't want to tell anybody we're going to, because we don't want to sound like a bunch of weenies. Paul, by the way, even boasted in his weakness. Remember that? He said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. You know, if we will challenge our fears, we will discover something interesting about them. We'll discover that they can be defeated. And something else we might discover is that some of them were put on us by someone else. Some of you may remember this story. I told it back in 2005 when I actually experienced, I think was in 2004. We had a neighbor on the north side of town when we lived out there in the country, and he had this dog. In my book, I didn't use the dog's name because I didn't know whether he would appreciate it, the neighbor that is, and I didn't want to give him any angst. Anyway, but he had this dog. This dog, I mean, the head of this dog was here. His back was about here. He was really big and bulgy and hairy, and his name was Wolf. And he looked like a wolf. I mean, really, really huge dog. And they bought this dog for one reason and one reason only, and that was to keep people from coming on their property. And it worked dang good. I'm telling you, Wolf was not somebody you wanted to run into. And the neighbor, you know, he came over and told me one time, because they kept Wolf in a enclosed area. They put up a 6-foot-high chain link fence on a half an acre to keep Wolf in there. And then they had initially they were in a mobile home inside the area. But then they moved into a house on the other side of some family members, and they all lived there. But Wolf was right there all the time. They said, "And now if Wolf ever gets loose, there is something you can do to make sure Wolf doesn't bite you." I said, "Okay, what is that? Because if he gets loose, I'm going to die." He looks pretty bad. They said, "Yeah, just all you have to do is just say one word." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "Just say the word snake." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, well," he says, I have to admit it, I've got an unreasonable fear of snakes." That's ophidiophobia for those of you who are being technical. I have an unreasonable fear of snakes. And my wife and I were in the backyard when we got Wolf, when he was just a little tiny puppy. Hadn't had him on any time at all. And I reached down to pick up a ball, and when I did, my wife saw it first. Right beside the ball, where the ball was laying on the ground, was a snake. And I'm grabbing the ball, and she screams snake just as I realize snake, and I scream snake, and so we both yelled, "Snake!" And he says, then we ran across the yard to get away from the snake, and the puppy ran with us. That puppy didn't know what it was afraid of. That puppy may have thought the ball was a snake. I don't know. But that puppy never forgot the fear that came out of those two people when they saw the snake and ran away from it. Now, that was a little hard for me to believe, because this great big monster dog was going to be afraid of one word. But one day I was out mowing in the backyard, and there was old Wolf, and he was paws on the big fence, like he liked to do, you know, telling me that I shouldn't have been, because our land, there was a lane, and then there was a little gap between the fence, and I would mow that for our neighbor, you know. So I'm coming right down through there, barreling down through there on my little, you know, MTD tractor, and I stopped, couldn't resist. I got off my little tractor, turned it off, got off, walked over to the fence. And I was making him really mad now, Because it was one thing to bark at me because I was near the fence. It's another thing to come right up to the fence. So here he is. I mean, this dog's as tall as me. He's got his hands up on the fence. Paws up on the fence. And he's just... Arr, 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 and I got as close as I could get. You know, he couldn't get his nose. His nose was too big to get through the chain link. And I got right up to him and I went, snake. It was amazing. I never saw anything like that in my life. That dog turned and he ran and looking back at me, just looking at me, and he ran all the way to the other side of the compound where the other side of the fence was. And he just sat over there. I was like, that's crazy. That crazy dog. All I had to do was snake. And that was it. He was gone. Freaked out completely. Actually felt a little bad. I really did. I felt a little bad. And, you know, because I was like, a poor dog, he doesn't even know why he's afraid. He just knows he's afraid. It was imprinted on him when he was a little puppy. You know, fear of snakes, a lot of people will say, well, that's just smart. Well, you know, we didn't kill the snakes out in the country where we lived, and we never had any mice in the house. Because the garter snakes that were around our area, I tried to let them all loose and let them all live because garter snakes keep the mice down. I learned that when I was a boy. We saved all the black snakes and all the garter snakes, and if we ran into a copperhead, we chopped his head off. You know how you can tell, by the way. The copperheads have, if you look in their little eye, you'll see a slit. Just get down close enough to look in there. Yeah, poisonous snakes have little diamond-shaped slit eyes, and non-poisonous snakes have round pupils in their eyes instead of a little slit. But you usually want to find that out after you've used the hoe. I got it. Still, you know, that poor dog, he had that thing put on him. What if I told you that I think your fear, my fear, may not belong to you or me? What if no fear we have is our fault? What if every fear was put on us by an enemy who wants to keep us from good things? If we were created in God's image and likeness, then he didn't give us a spirit of fear. So then who did? Fear's not part of who he created you to be. Fear's not part of who he created me to be. I don't want any part of something he didn't create for me. I don't want to be part of it, and I don't want to excuse it, and I don't want to make it easy, and I don't want to make it acceptable, and yet, this is going to mess you up today if you're listening to this on Facebook or you're in this room. This is going to mess you up if you keep it, if you retain this. This is going to mess you up because you're going to realize every time you're participating in fear, you're helping the wrong side. And you're permitting the wrong side to take advantage of you. Now, I wrote the book, and it took me from 2005 to 2013 to get it done. And now that's 6 years ago. I am not perfectly fear-free. I'm suffering from gotnophobia. It's contagious, and it's incurable, and it's going to take me over. And that's what I want. I want this phobia, gotnophobia, to just keep coming until it takes me completely over. But I have learned this. When I'm angry, when I got these things going on, I have learned to ask myself, hey, Tim, what are you afraid of? We've all been imprinted with fear, but that fear didn't originate with us or God. In reality, our fears are not our fears. Let me say that again. In reality, our fears are not our fears. They belong to somebody else. They came from a source external to God and his kingdom. And so as we recognize that reality, that our fears aren't ours, then we won't be afraid to recognize those fears and deal with them. And we'll start to have a resistance to phobophobia and any other phobia that comes at us. And we will be able to stop it because we'll have the truth. Amen?